Thanks for joining us. Today is the Power Hour. It's going to go quick. We're just going to be doing 1 hour. Looks like right now questions are starting to come in pretty heavy, but there's still time. If you have a question, press 1 on your phone, and there's still a chance to get in. The longer you wait, the harder it is to get through. So if you have a question, a comment, a topic, go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and we will get to you. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. This is the Power Hour. This is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, horsepower, fuel mileage, modifications, troubleshooting, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. And I've got Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power to help out on those. Welcome back, guys.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, Kevin.
Doing great. What's new and exciting this week?
Not a whole lot that we weren't talking about last week. I spent the weekend cutting up pieces and fabbing up more of the soot traps, so or the soot separators. So that's that was my pretty much where my focus has been. And we're working on some infrastructure stuff here at the shop too. With a we're adapting to the Mitchell system for our operating system here for the shop. So been busy with that on my end. I don't know if Ethan's got anything interesting he stumbled upon this week or not.
No, just the normal, a few broken ECMs here and there.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. Kind of the same thing here. It's I don't have anything this week, but we've been fighting weather out here. My God, it's been just crazy for a couple weeks. Today, I mean, we have snow everywhere. It looks like Buffalo. It's just piled up everywhere you can find a pilot, and they don't use salt in Oregon, so the roads are just solid paths. They're just packed snow and ice. I haven't seen pavement in quite some time. And today we are expecting between an inch and an inch and a half of freezing rain.
Wow. Well, that'll make a mess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be
serious avalanche. That'll be serious avalanche hazard up there in the mountains where you are.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. Last night, Portland was in the teens temperature wise here. Actually, they might have been in the 20s. We were in the teens. We're out in the gorge. We're at sea level. I mean, we're right at sea level. And we were in the teens. If you head straight up Mount Hood up to the lodge, which is at five or 6,000 feet, I think the lodge is, it was 48 degrees.
Oh, wow. That's odd.
Yeah, I guess what happens is we have so much snowpack that we're actually getting a thermal inversion. The upper air temperature is actually warm, but we have so much snow, it's keeping the air near the ground cold. So that's why we're now going to get freezing rain instead of snow. It's going to start coming down as rain. As it gets into the lower atmosphere, it's going to freeze.
Wow. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting driving around. Yesterday, I went to Hood River. It's about 20 minutes away on the interstate. And the last couple of days, we haven't had any snow. I mean, it's been clear and sunny, but again, they don't use salt. So there's still ice and snow all over the road. And in a 20-mile drive, there are three accidents. One of them was I watched a truck jackknife and literally blocked the whole road. That was ugly. So I don't know what it's going to look like tonight. Portland is just not prepared for this kind of stuff.
So Hood River, the closest town to you?
For the most part, yeah. Actually, I mean, we're a tiny little town. And then right across the river in Washington, there's a little town, Stevenson, a little bigger than what we are.
Okay.
Out here in the gorge, it's just tiny little towns at each exit. Hood River is pretty good size because you have the whole Hood River Valley. So it's a pretty decent
size. I've been there.
Yeah, it's 20 minutes away, and then Portland's 45 minutes the other way.
Okay. I couldn't get over all the windsurfing. I didn't know that that was the windsurf capital of the world. The first time I went there, it was in wintertime even. There were people windsurfing. It was crazy.
It
I was on
is
my way
crazy.
Up to Mount Hood Meadows. I was on my way up to Mount Hood Meadows to ski for a day, and I drove through Hood River and stopped for lunch, and like there were people out there windsurfing, and then I went up to Mount Hood Meadows and had a great day of skiing. It was terrific.
That's what happens out here. Hood River is actually where the kite boarding was started. So they were doing a lot of surfing here, and then somebody decided to, you know, put a big parachute at the end of a rope and see what that would do. And now way more kite boarders than there are windsurfers. I mean, kite boarding is just huge out here. The other thing that they do, again, kind of invented here, they snow kite. So they take their snowboards and they take the same kite they use out on the water, and they go up into the meadows and they let the kite pull them around on their snowboard.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to ask me twice to try that. That'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be fun. Other than that, it's just all about the weather here. So I haven't been doing much of anything else, just getting the minimum amount of work done and trying to make sure that we don't get buried. I've done a lot of snow shoveling and a lot of wood chopping the last couple weeks.
Well, we have the normal Portland weather here. It's 45 and raining. I had a really good friend that lived in Portland, and I'd spent a good decent amount of time there some years ago. And you ask him how Portland is, and he'd just say, "Oh, it's 45 and raining." So, that's what we have here in Pittsburgh now. Is I think it might even be 50 today and raining. But regardless, it's gray, dreary, raining. The snow's all melted. It's pretty blah. I'd rather have what you have.
Yeah, this is at least interesting. You know, it gives me something to do. Talk about, you know, so I don't mind it. I don't have to go out in it. That's kind of nice too. Working at home was kind of nice, but I don't have to go out in it. I've probably been out in it more than anybody else. I'm out shoveling and drive around town on the bad days and pull people out of their driveway, and so it's been fun. Well, I guess since we have nothing, we should get to some calls.
Yeah.
All right, let's do that. Let's start off in Florida. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, everyone. How's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm doing good. This is mainly for Ethan. I've got a 07 Coronado. It's a glider. The motor's 98 D-Deck 4. About a year ago, I had an issue with the ECM. Or the throttle position sensor. And the way it was acting, I figured out that it had to be a wire, and I tracked it down in the harness close to the starter. The loom had, you know, messed up a couple wires. I fixed them. Everything's been fine. Now here, lately, it's doing it again. I haven't checked the wire harness yet, but it's acting differently. Before, it would just, you know, go anywhere from 5% on the throttle position sensor up to 20%. A couple times it almost totally cut out. Now, when it does it, when I first start out in the morning, I can tell it's going to do it because it'll hesitate when I accelerate. It'll hesitate or maybe surge, and then it'll lock in at 2%. It won't go any higher. And the only way it goes lower is if it, you know, goes away altogether. Yesterday, I'd pull up to a stoplight and leave it in gear to about 700 RPM. I wouldn't push in the clutch. It would idle normally. I could rev the motor up, and it would idle normally, but the throttle position sensor on the scan gauge was saying 2%. As soon as I accelerated, you know, it got to where it was hard to ship. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've seen a lot of different sensor failures there. It depends on how it's failed. Has the throttle position sensor itself ever been changed?
It was changed about a year ago.
Okay. Now you're using the scan gauge to see what the TPS is.
Yeah.
the throttle position. Yeah. Now, if you're just sitting there and you it doesn't go to 100% ever.
No, it goes up like 95 or 97.
Okay. Should go to 100. When it's acting up, does it go to 100% ever?
No, I've never seen it. Also, a year and a half ago, you guys put your tune on it and cleaned it up.
Okay. I mean, I would search into the wiring harness. You're going to find, again, it rubs somewhere else again. You can even check where you found the problem the first time.
Yeah.
In case it didn't rub there again, or if moisture got into the fix you did.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to check that, and but, you know, until I can get somewhere and do it and, you know, not be covered in salt and everything, I don't want to do it, so.
Yeah, it's
that
time of year.
I don't
want to
get into that. Well, so, all right, well, you know, if I can't find anything, I've got another idea, but, you know, I got to wait for it to act up to check that, but, every now and then the scan gauge will act funny. And there's been times I'll start the generator on the truck and the scan gauge will actually come on with the key turned off.
Or it's sending a power surge through the power wire, it could be, because it'll come on for a short time.
Yeah. No, it comes on, stays on.
All right, we've got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more stuff right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Ethan and John with me, and now it looks like we've got Bruce as well, so let's welcome him in. Hey, Bruce. Welcome back.
Hey, Kevin. I was on to begin with, but you just couldn't hear me.
Ah, okay. I was wondering what was going on.
All right.
So when we open the show, we open the way we normally do, anything new and exciting, and for the most part, John and Ethan have been working too hard to have anything new and exciting, and I've been shoveling snow, so I didn't have anything either. What about you?
He's rehabbing a knee, so he's not too exciting either.
A week ago, I was going to do the show, but I was in rehab in the Vail Hospital, and I had some of the nurses wanted to say hi to the truckers of America, but something happened that I just couldn't get on. But anyway, yeah, I'm in rehab every day. I'm sitting here with a nice machine on my leg, but we're making it, and we're going to be at the snowmobile conference the following week, our first one. So I'm ready to take some calls.
All right, we'll do that. Yeah, you have a nice machine on your leg. We have one in the sky. We're getting an inch to an inch and a half of freezing rain.
I heard that. That means you need to move back to Colorado.
Yeah, I need to go back up to 9,500 feet.
That's where we all need to be. That's where we all need to be.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to some calls then, because we have lots of them. Let's head off to California. Fred, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I got two questions for John and Ethan. Outside temperature sensor on your mirror, if that's disconnected, does that affect your fuel mileage? Like, is it connected to the ECM? And if it was disconnected, would it affect your fuel mileage in the wintertime?
No. No. Well, what truck do you have?
06379.
No, it won't affect it in any way. I believe they're in the mirror on them ones.
Yeah.
It's just a dash readout. That's all it is.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if it was wired through the ECM to accommodate for the temperature for fuel. Another question.
Yeah.
If I was overnight an ECM to you guys for a tune, what's the turnaround time for that?
What ECM is it?
for Acer? C15
MXS or NXS?
I believe it's MX.
It's what would you want done with it?
I'd like to get some better fuel mileage out of it.
Typically, we're at the 1 to 2 days. We've been trying really hard to get them out if like that in 1 day.
My other thought was I'm only about 4.5 hours from you guys. If I left early in the day, and would I get it back the same day if I got it to you in the morning?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. I'll try to work it into to a Friday. Do I need to make like an appointment ahead of time, or?
That's the best way, is to give us a heads up, just
okay,
to make sure we're not
right,
overly busy that day.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. I'll try to arrange to do it that way then. And as always, you guys put out great information. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks
for
the call. Let's head off to New Mexico. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Oh, I had my ECM, y'all done a program on it back about 4 months ago up there, ISX 15 model. Does wonderful. I ain't got no great drivability. It drives good. Hell, the damn thing climb trees like get traction. But I'm using, seem like I'm using a whole lot more DEF than what I am. I'm running between 100 and 110 miles to the gallon on it.
Yeah, you would be. We've got a that was one of our earlier tunes on that. We've corrected that. So you need to get back by here at some point, and we'll make some adjustments
okay.
To that program.
All right. All right, sir. That's all I got. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. That was an easy one. Let's go to Alberta. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I got a question about a 2012 ISX that had carbon packing at 400,000 miles. The motor was rebuilt, and now it's got about 20,000 miles on it, and the turbo has started coughing. First of all, it was coughing once when a guy would let off the throttle, but now it's more like three times every time. Would that be something like the DPF being plugged up from the carbon or something else in the system that didn't get cleaned up during the in-frame?
I'd be willing to bet that it's some carbon packing also around the aperture for the variable geometry turbo. There's a slider in the Cummins that needs to move pretty freely, and if it doesn't, you could create a cough like that.
Okay.
So probably some more carbon issues, I'd think. Unless, Ethan, you got something else on that?
That would be where I would start, but I'd also check the boost sensor again to make sure you don't have carbon packing happen again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That.
That's a simple, easy one, too. Yeah, the boost pressure sensor in the manifold is also the intake temperature sensor, and it gets coated in carbon to the point where it no longer reads accurately, and it throws the fueling off. So that's an easy one. You pull it right out. It's a plastic sensor. Well, it's 10 millimeter bolt that holds it in there. It's be careful taking it out. It's just a plastic tab that holds it in place and a 10-millimeter bolt that holds it down, and it's got no ring seal on it, so just gently pull it out of there, and you'll find it coated in carbon on the inside. And what you want to do is take a soft brush and some sort of an organic cleaner, and just like a paintbrush is enough, and brush all the carbon off of it, like Simple Green or Purple Power or something sort of acidic, or even like wheel cleaner or aluminum cleaner works really well to cut that carbon. And brush it off and stick it back in there and see if that doesn't fix the problem.
Okay, now what about the turbo actuator? Is that something that can be cleaned, or would the turbo have to be changed?
It depends on the shop you take it to. Most people just like to change them. Technically, it could be taken apart and cleaned. That's a possibility if it's got no other issues. So that'd be, you know, a judgment call. You know, if you're handy with a wrench, you could probably do it yourself. If not, you go to a trusted shop or someone who knows turbos and see if they'd be interested in taking care of that.
Excellent. Okay, that's all I got. Oh, John, one other question.
Yes.
Are you going to get your remote tuning out here in Alberta?
Alberta? I don't know. Have we talked to anybody in Alberta?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, we might be able to, though. If there's anyone listening from that area that's interested, or if you've got a trusted shop that might be interested, have them give me a call. Ask for me when he calls in, and I could talk to him about.
We have a shop up in Edmonton that I believe deals with you guys. I believe they sell your parts, Dave's Diesel.
Okay.
And they do a lot of performance.
Does that sound familiar to you, Bruce?
Yeah, we know Dave.
Okay.
Yep. I don't know if he would.
That would be great if you could get the tuning in him.
Have him give me a ring.
Okay. I'll throw the bug in his ear. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
John,
call.
John, if he wanted to ship us that turbo, we could repair that turbo and clean that turbo up.
I'd be glad to. Yeah, if he wanted to ship that to us, yeah, yeah. If you want to ship it to us, that'd be a great way to handle it as well. Just ship it in here. We'll take it apart, clean it up, put it back together.
All right. And speaking of Alberta, we're going to stay right there, but we're going to Mike this time. Mike, welcome to the program.
How are you guys?
Good.
Good. I got a 2013 Pete where we took the 2250 out of it and put a Signature 600 in it, a drop-in from Cummins. And I've got about 607 hours on it now, and it's still slobbering out the exhaust. If it idles, it'll leak oil out of the exhaust, drip it down the side of the motor, out of the clamp behind the turbo, it'll drip out of there. And then I'm just wondering if that's going to clear up or if I should be talking to Cummins about it or what.
How many hours are on this? I mean, how many miles?
I got 607 hours, but I've only got about 13,000 miles on it. And I pull heavy.
Okay,
we're 138,000 pounds loaded, 65,000 empty.
Is this engine running at operating temp 180, 190?
She sits on 180 all the time. I got to pull a really big hill to get it to go 190 to 200.
To my knowledge, Cummins won't, you know, for like, let's say, won't recognize an issue, like a warranty claim like that until it has 50,000 miles on it. Because they take a little extra time, depending on condition of the, you know, where it's being driven, to seat in. I've seen it one other time on one that we did here, and by 50,000 miles, it was all sealed up.
Okay. Alrighty. Sounds good. Yeah, it's not burning oil, like, the last oil change was 300 hours, and it only went halfway down the crosshatch on the dipstick. So,
yeah, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, I would expect that one to seal up.
Okay.
All right, there's the music. We're going to get to a break, and we'll come right back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. And I've got Bruce and Ethan and John from Pittsburgh Power helping out. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan and John with me. You know, guys, I just realized I say that you guys are here helping out, but really you're doing all the heavy lifting. I'm just pressing buttons. We're going to get to some phone calls. We're going to stay north of the border, but we're heading to the other end, Ontario. Slavko, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My story starts by about 2 months ago. I took my C15, it's an 06 C15, to my CAT dealer. I was getting some noise when I put my engine brake on high, and with it would kind of have like almost like a ticking kind of a sound when I was allowing it to decel, and if I accelerated, it would have like almost a kind of a spooling, kind of a spinning kind of a sound. So I took it to my cat dealer and I says, "Can you guys take a look at this?" They replaced the two bellows, I think that's what they're called, bellows at the turbo. Checked everything out and said everything was fine. Took the truck out. It still makes this noise, and the engine just ran pathetically. It just wasn't up to par. Last week, I went to my regular garage, and they replaced a solenoid, they said, that works around the water jacket, down around the turbo, just on the inside of the on the inside there, behind the turbo. I guess there's a solenoid. They replaced that, and my engine runs, I mean, like 50% better. My mileage is up, my power is up, everything is up. So the mechanic told me that this has something to do with allowing for colder air, and like I guess some sort of a temperature exchange up and around that area. So that was the good news. But the bad news is that I still have this kind of a ticking sound when I decel, when my engine brake is on, and when I accelerate off of that, it almost sounds like a turbo spooling up, and I'm at loss.
Sounds to me like you still may have another exhaust leak. Some of these cats are prone to, I'll take that back. The bellows are really difficult to install properly, the ones that they had replaced. You need to have someone do a smoke test on this thing. I think on the exhaust side would be the ideal way to do it. And take a really good look at all of your exhaust manifold gaskets as well. I know that the studs get kind of rusty, and sometimes you'll pop one or break one and not know it's broken. But take a really close look at all of your exhaust gaskets where the manifold mates to the block. And they're kind of difficult to see on an Acer. You got a whole lot of turbos and a lot of stuff going on there to see it. But get yourself a flashlight and take a really good look at every port. And take a good look at those new bellows. It's really, really easy. It would be, no real discredit to the mechanics who worked on it if they didn't have one quite right. It's not an easy task. So it'd be worth taking another look in that area.
So would that would also give that sound like it was kind of spinning up when I accelerate?
Possibly.
Really?
The ticky noise for sure. Yeah. The spinning up when you accelerate, I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I would do a boost test on the whole charger.
Yeah, boost test for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Just to make sure you don't have a boost leak, and that's what you're
sounds
hearing.
Like a boost leak and or an exhaust leak on the on the pressure side feeding the turbos.
Could be both.
Or both, yeah.
Yeah, because I took it in for them to see that, so I guess I'll just have to bring it back to them and see if that manifold is leaking. Around the bellows there, I was looking. I didn't see any black smoke or anything carbon. But I was interested in what is that solenoid? Like, that was, I was really happy when I kind of got into the truck and it actually sounded like an engine accelerating instead of having that stuttering like it was, when it's cold, it kind of stutters, like lugs, kind of has a lugging sound.
That solenoid controls the coolant flow through the pre-cooler. The Acerts run, because of the twin turbo, they make real high intake air temperature. So Cat's solution was to put a water-to-air cooler using the engine coolant to cool down the air before going through your charged air cooler.
I see. It works great. I was really happy.
Yeah.
If I get rid of the ticking sound, I'd be even happier.
Probably.
Why don't
take
you
air temp was probably high.
If you're in Eastern Canada, why not bring it to Pittsburgh and we'll fix it for you?
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. Right now, I'm just getting some stuff together and hopefully somewhere maybe in end of February, March, because that'll be probably a better time for me to get down there. And we'll do the computer thing also.
Oh, good.
Okay. We can go from there.
So where are you in Canada? Are you in the Toronto
I'm up
area?
In Niagara. I'm near Niagara.
Oh, you're close. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're only about 4 hours away. Yep.
Okie doke. Well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks
welcome.
For the call. We're going to head off to Colorado. Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Hey, I have got an ISS 500. I took it to Rocky Mountain Cummins and had an in-frame done a year ago, November. Since then, they put 5 turbos on this thing because we just had a huge loss of power. It just wouldn't, I run I-70 over Vail and Eisenhower every day, and I just didn't have the power that it had before the in-frame. So they keep changing turbos. They finally, in August, they changed the turbo and got in the ECM and said, well, that 500, somebody has moved to a 475. So they took it upon themselves to change the ISX back to a 500. When they did that, it didn't help the power any. However, it's a VNL 780. It's got 6 stages of J. Well, had. Since they got in the ECM and did that, I now only have 2 stages. Stage 1 is nothing. Nothing happens at all. Stage 2 and 3 are kind of what stage 2 used to be. And then 4, 5, and 6 are about what stage 4 used to be. Now, I have been back every other week since then, and they put new solenoids in, new spools, new springs. They said they changed the programming back to the 475 and then back to the 500 again, which didn't help anything. Just got it back Friday, and we still only have essentially 2 stages of Jake. Now, I've heard a rumor that with the Volvo, there's a class action lawsuit against Cummins. By getting in the ECM, you lose your 6 stages of Jake, and they can't get it back. Now, do you know what might cause it, and is there actually a lawsuit, and what can I do about this?
I don't know if there's a lawsuit there, but on the 6 stages, it sounds like they have the program set up wrong. It might be the right program, but they might have at one point accidentally changed how the Jake switch and the Jake settings. And then they don't know how to put it back is what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
So that would be my first thoughts there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I would have to look up I never heard of what, the people losing it unless – the program has been changed. It would be something I'd have to look at there to see exactly how they do it. I never really looked into it too deep.
Ethan, could we remote tune that engine?
I'd have to see what it looked like there. I don't know how they set the 6 stages up on one of them.
Is it getting data? Is it a data stream from the body control module? Some sort of interface between the body control or the cab control, shall we say, and the ECM?
It's going to be a request.
Request from that's the switch in the dash is probably connected to the cab control.
But I'm thinking that the switch is set up wrong in the ECM.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. So the ECM.
A proprietary engineer came and rode with me up and down I-70, where we went through the stages on the switch, and he was data logging. When he data logged, he said the ECM is telling it, you got 6 stages. But, as I said, going down a hill, it is very distinct. 2 stages all there is. So, it's almost like the ECM is talking, but the engine's not listening.
Have you talked to Volvo about this, a Volvo tech or someone with the Volvo software to interface with the cab control?
Everybody I've talked to said it sounds like a programming issue, except for Cummins. Cummins said, you're welcome to take it somewhere else and pay them to reprogram it.
Well, yeah, I don't know that
it's kind of under warranty, but I'm thinking that might
be
the last
setting in the, it's a setting in the program, but I think you need to talk to Volvo. I'd talk to Volvo.
Are there any Volvo dealers that you would actually recommend?
I don't know of any.
I don't either.
I'll jump in there too. I don't know. And I own Volvos for years. We'll be right back. Stick around. We'll get to more of your calls and questions right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to your calls. We're off to Illinois this time. Gus, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you? 4 years ago, I had my truck over at Pittsburgh Power to do, I guess to call it politically correct, an EGR repair at the time. Now, since EPA has come in and changed everything and you guys have kind of directed in a different direction, if I need to get my truck, when it comes time to rebuild, if I bring my truck there, do you guys put it back to the way it is right now when I drive it in, or are you guys bound by some EPA restrictions now and you have to reverse some of the changes you've made to my engine?
I want you to call me this afternoon on the phone and we'll discuss that.
Okay, that's why I wasn't sure. That's why I wanted to kind of limit what I was going to say online, but.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to find out. Okay,
yeah, that
sounds good to me.
There's not going to be any problems.
Okay, that's kind of what I wanted to hear. I appreciate it. Thanks.
You call and ask for Bruce, okay?
All right, good stuff. We're off to Florida. Lamar, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
What's on your mind?
I wanted to ask about the Max Force engines that are in the International Pro Stars. I heard that they're defective. I wanted to know, was it what years were they defective?
I'll jump in.
Little or no experience with those. Yeah, that's you, Kevin.
I'll jump in and say that defective would be a compliment for that engine.
Okay.
And that's all years. That may be the worst disaster ever put under the hood of a truck.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I would say that along with the 2008-2009 Caterpillar. That was a disaster also. And on the Navistar, I think it's from 2003 on. Now, the last ones aren't so bad. And if you contact Doc Holliday in Las Cruces, New Mexico at Border International, he is the only one I know that's been successful on that engine. Again, it's Doc Holliday. And yes, he is the fourth generation of the real Doc Holliday. He is a great guy. He's a drag racer. Border International, Las Cruces, New Mexico. He has that engine pretty well figured out.
So just a quick history on that. When they had to meet, when everybody else went to the DPF and we were able to actually scale back some of the EGR, International went the other way. They went in, not DPF, DEF, when we were going that way, their idea was that they could get away with what they referred to as enhanced EGR. It was EEGR. And they were bringing like 60 or 65% of the exhaust gas back through the engine.
Wow.
Yeah. The one model.
Candidate for a soot separator.
Yeah, we can fix that. We can help that. And there's not a lot. I've learned a lot about EGR. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the one model I looked at had four radiators, three low temperature radiators, and a high temperature radiator. The plumbing was insane. To do an overhead on that engine, when I looked at it, I thought it's going to take you 12 hours to do an overhead.
Wow.
I've seen pictures of them.
What's the origin of that engine? Is that something European?
I don't know.
Okay. The new one, I was going to mention this last week. I've been reading up on some of, I don't know if you've noticed, some of the super truck prototypes are coming to fruition. Have you been following any of this? You know, Volvo's hit the road, and International Navistar's did it about 2 weeks ago. It was a really, really, theirs was actually really an interesting concept that had some neat energy recovery features and stuff on it that I thought were pretty cool. But, yeah, I don't know if you've read any of that.
A little bit. The whole thing kind of just pisses me off. It's easy to do that when the government just hands out tens of millions of dollars.
See, I don't mind if I was getting the tens of millions of dollars. I wouldn't mind a bit. So, but they have built some pretty cool stuff. Yeah. So
yeah.
It's the International is actually pretty impressive. But interestingly, I read the article, the first article that popped up on IDT or something, and it was really in depth, and it explained they've got an air compressor that declutches. They generate electricity on diesel, though they do it through the engine. They don't do it at the brakes. They've got a 48-volt system. A lot of interesting stuff that really made sense. They power a whole lot of stuff off the battery, and they only really charge the batteries while they're, you know, when they're not looking for power. And they've hit 13 miles per gallon in their testing. So it's significant, you know, on the test track that the DOE specified for doing it, which, you know, is fairly heavy. It's not a full 80,000 pounds, but I think it's, you know, like 60,000 and whatnot. But so it was a great article. And I sent the link to Bruce, and I don't know that he'd read it or not. And I wanted to read it again, and I couldn't find it. So I searched it, and I found the same, what looked like the same article, but it was totally different. So I'm like, well, I'll go into my email, and I'll click the link that I sent Bruce, and I'm going to get the article. Well, I clicked the link, and the article is now different. all that info that they put in that really in-depth first article all of a sudden became very generic.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I've been collecting I've been bookmarking and collecting the sites, and I've just been busy to read. But every time I see a headline, I've got a place I've been storing them all. So one of these days, I'm just going to go in and start reading it all, because I am interested in the super truck stuff. It just seems to me like another typical government waste of money. I mean, you look at the first round of super truck, how much money they spent, and the results, and we could develop these technologies so much cheaper. I realize research and development and prototypes are outrageously expensive, but I just don't understand why we're spending our money on that stuff.
Kevin, I agree with that. And I think because we've applied twice now for the grants, twice they've passed out $160 million. They don't seem to hold people responsible. They're giving it to the large companies that are squandering it. We've asked for some help so we could build our truck. And we told them that we could have that truck in 9 months. And we get no response from the government.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty typical. That's because you aren't big enough to have 10 lobbyists living in Washington, D.C. doing all that stuff.
That's what it boils down right there.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. Those are the companies getting the money. They've got lobbyists who live in Washington, D.C. and do nothing but schmooze and know the inside track on all this stuff. And you're right, they squander it. I'm not saying we don't come up with good technologies, but for the price we pay and the price we've been paying on this project, why isn't any of this stuff or very little of it on the road? I mean, it's wonderful to build a truck that gets 13 miles to the gallon. When are we going to see some of that technology actually working? All right, I'm going to squeeze in another call here before I go off on a rant. Let's go to Texas. Tim, welcome to the program.
How you doing? Hey, I got a 05 Acert, and the boost gauge on the scan gauge won't go over 31.5. Is that a limit on the gauge that I need to set some kind of limit on it?
That is a limit of the 1708 data link that it's being read from the scan gauge. It can only only reads 31.9.
Okay, and so that's something that needs to be changed in the programming, or
you can go in. Do you have a 7-pin or 9-pin port?
9.
Okay, in the scan gauge, there's options of what data link to read, and it sounds like it's only reading from the 1708. If you can change that to the 1939, it should read higher. It should read the actual number the whole way up.
Another thing, it's only getting like 173 degrees on the scan gauge. Do I got a bad sensor, or just not coming up to temperature, the motor?
I would double check that with a infrared heat gun there, just to make sure, because it sounds like it's only getting to 173 then. What does your gauge on the dash say?
That's to say, it reads about 150, that does, so.
Okay. I think it's actually reading correctly there.
So you think I got a stuck thermostat?
It sounds like
that's
it.
That's where I'd go, yeah.
I would double check the heat reading, though, with infrared gun, heat gun there.
Yeah, I got one. Just check it right at the block or at the water pump. Or...
thermostat housing.
Okay. All right. That's all I had. Thanks.
All right. That's all we need. And in fact, that's going to wrap everything up for the day. Good timing. We've got to get out of here. We will see you next time. Thanks to Bruce and Ethan and John from Pittsburgh Power for doing all the heavy lifting around here. And we'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you here tomorrow for Destination Health.